So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Mr. Bischoff, I believe you have one more try.
That one's a little wet, wasn't it?
You ready for your last attempt?
Sick. But I can beat that burp. I can beat that burp.
It's your last shot. Make the most of it.
Uh-oh.
I gotta give you credit on that one. Can I warm up one more time?
Sure. Help yourself.
Allow me, my third and final effort. Just kidding. I feel better.
We can proclaim you...
I feel much better.
...the winner of the burping contest.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you with another review. And we're joined in studio, Wei, by a very special guest.
Oh, yes. My name
That's
is...
That was your cue.
I thought you were going to throw it to Ernie. Well, let me do the introductions. And yes, we are joined by Mr. Ernie Vicente.
Yes, correct.
And Ernie is joining us for this review because you won our Royal Rumble contest.
He won a video game, and he cashed it in for the opportunity to do a review instead. So it means that we have now been able to put a dollar value on what it means to do a guest review with us.
Wow, it's worth one Nintendo video game. But Ernie, introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Ernie Vicente. You guys got it right. Because usually people say Vincent or Vicente. But yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of Review Away and The Law. I've been listening to since Starphone.
Oh, my God,
yeah, yeah.
Starphone.
Oh, yeah,
no
for
way.
Sure. Before the internet.
350-3000.
Yes, that's right. No way.
Way before my time, but I remember.
Mine too.
I remember Starphone used to be. When I was a kid, that was like the one way to get wrestling news, with like Norm DaCosta and Jolton Joe doing wrestling updates on Starphone, which for people outside of Toronto will have no idea what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. And there was no area code before.
That's right. That was before you had to dial in like 416 or 905.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's so hard to use the phone nowadays. Yeah. All these extra digits.
Think Mean Gene's Hotline, but without the 900 number.
This was free. And it was free.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the news wasn't any... it was not as juicy as what you'd get probably from Mean Gene.
Oh, and it got ridiculous, too, because Starphone ended up having categories for, like, everything.
Yeah.
You could hear, like, there was a line dedicated to every outlet of news.
There's one for
sports, everything.
Video games, and, like, I called the video game one once, and it was just... the lamest news. It wasn't even news.
Yeah.
Like, this game comes out such and such date. Anyway,
Now, I was going to say, Ernie, we met back at the first time we went to go see Fight Pro Wrestling, Ernie. You were doing stand-up at intermission.
Yes.
So
right.
Tell us a bit about just getting into stand-up itself and kind of the wrestling connection you found here doing the Fight Pro Wrestling gig.
I was always a wrestling fan, and then... only a couple of years ago, I started doing stand-up, and it was only until this year that my friend, who's also a comedian, he knew Ashley Six, who runs Fight.
Right.
And then Ashley Six, he needed some comedians for the halftime, and my friend contacted me, and then she's like, "Yeah, you want to do it?" And then I was like, "Yeah, sure." But then, like at the time, I was so excited to be in the ring to talk, but then I was like, "Wait a minute, these are wrestling fans, you know, like they don't want to see wrestling, you know what I mean?"
Sure. I remember because we talked to you right beforehand. And
yeah,
man, I'm going to be doing stand-up at intermission. I was like, stand-up at a wrestling show? I don't know about this.
And it was you.
It was K. Trevor Wilson who was also doing it. And I thought it came off pretty well. The crowd seemed to be into it.
Mm-hmm. It was very good. But it was a great experience. And they were really good.
So how long have you been doing stand-up now?
About 3 years now.
3 years? Yeah. And what was when you took the plunge into stand-up? Was it something you wanted to do for a long time and then finally kind of put together, five minutes and just did the open mic nights?
I went to Sheridan College and I took accounting. And then I graduated.
Natural transition to comedy.
No, and then every day in class, people would be like, you should be doing stand-up comedy and stuff. And I'm like, no, because my parents, they brainwash you guys and to be like, go to school, get a good job and stuff. And I'm like, no, there's no career in stand-up. I can't go up in front of a bunch of strangers and tell jokes and stuff. But then one time I just got drunk and then I wrote these jokes and then I just went to Yuck Yucks and then the rest, yeah, I just got hooked.
Are you affiliated with Yuck Yucks? Because I hear comedians if you're signed by Yuck Yucks, it's they got the exclusive on you.
Yeah, kind of. They're like the WWE.
They are.
Stand-up, yeah. But I'm more independent.
I guess you see the advantage there of being independent, because it seems that Yuck Yuck, it's a big platform, but it's kind of, if you're trying to grow as a comedian, it's very hard to do that outside of Yuck Yucks.
Yeah, you're very limited, but they have special contracts, But.
It's a lot like being an indie worker, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're getting into comedy, I mean, more and more as I kind of follow just the comedy scene in Toronto, I just see so many connections. And on top of that, a lot of comedians that I find are huge wrestling fans as well.
There's this
huge crossover, as we saw at the fight show.
Yeah, for sure. I think the first two rows were comedians.
And that's right. Ari Shaffir was at that show.
Yeah, yeah,
I remember.
Yeah.
Me and Wei saw him the night before or something at Yuck Yucks,
uh-huh.
And then here he is at the Fight Pro Wrestling show.
It really does go hand in hand. But for you, Arnie, do you take anything away from your years as a pro wrestling fan when you do your stand up comedy?
Oh, for sure. No, as John said, it's like you're independent and you're working to be signed. And that's what I'm trying to do, too. I'm trying to get signed by, the Yuck Yucks or something.
So how would you describe your type of comedy for somebody who, for the people who have never heard you?
My comedy is very, it's like nonsense. Do you know Mitch Hedberg?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's, one of my heroes, and, all of his jokes were weird. And, most of my stuff is just, like nonsense. It doesn't even make sense.
Have you ever had the experience where you've gone up and just totally bombed? Because I hear that's the best experience you can have as a comedian is experiencing that.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. Even my first time, because my first two shows were at Yuck Yucks, and they're great shows.
That's a lot of pressure, isn't that? Your first two shows and you're doing it at Yuck Yucks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but they're open mic nights, and I drink some stuff before that, so to loosen up. But then it was my third show, because you gain all this confidence, and your first two shows were great, and then you do I did my third show, and then it bombed, and it was so bad that I actually stopped for 5 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was intense. What brought you back after 5 months?
What happened? I just kept writing, and then I finally got another spot. And I think I broke up with my girlfriend. So
that's always the best. That's the best for getting for a set. It's all you need is a relationship to end, and that's the fire.
You get more time to devote.
Yeah, You get more time in the evenings.
That's it.
Grieving.
We'll chat a bit more, because you also do a YouTube series that Wei and I have both seen, The Entourage.
Yes.
And we'll chat about that later on. But Bad Blood 2003, and I'm going to ask you the question that me and Wei asked each other. Why Bad Blood 2003? We were like, hey, Ernie, pick whatever you want. You're like, how about Bad Blood 2003? And I was like, wow, there's an event you don't think about every day.
Because all the events that I want to do, you guys pretty much did it. The WrestleMania, most of the WrestleManias and the Eddie Guerrero No Way Out.
Right.
2004.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to do that one because I have that one. But
is this kind of just looking at your DVD bin of what have they not reviewed that I own?
Yeah, well, actually, I don't even have this copy. My friend Wayne, he had it, and I asked him, which DVD should I review? And then he gave me a list. I'm like, yeah, no, they've done that. You know, they've done like One Night Stand and all those ones. And then he's like, I have Bad Blood 2003, and it has like the Shawn Michaels Ric Flair match. I was like, okay, fine, you know, I'll check it out.
So that was the reason.
That was the reason.
Shawn
yeah.
Michaels and Flair.
Yeah, and he had the DVD, so I borrowed it from him.
Without taking into account of what else was on this card.
Nope, I had no idea.
I won't lie. Halfway through this, I'm like, I think Ernie is fucking with us with this event. I think he knew exactly that there was going to be a lot of Mae Young on this show.
Oh, and yeah.
He just wanted us to have to endure this.
As soon as I heard Redneck Triathlon, I thought this guy was was picking deliberately picking a terrible, terrible show that we've somehow
Which tends
missed.
To make for the best podcast.
Oh, I know.
So in that regard,
yeah,
so
you're welcome.
I applaud you for this choice.
I'm sorry, and you're welcome.
Yeah. It's the ones I think that people enjoy the most are... The worse the show, the better the podcast.
And when you consider that, this show, Bad Blood 2003, is almost a hidden gem amongst the terrible, terrible
This one kind of gets lost in that kind of era. This was a weird time for the WWE. It was 2003. We were safely removed from the Attitude Era. But this company was really... It was this weird transition period where I don't think they really knew what they were trying to be at the time. A lot of the stars of the Attitude Era were kind of moving onwards, uh-huh. like Rock and Austin, and you had this great mid-card, but a lot of shit at this time, too.
Especially at this part of time, which was still relatively new with the brand split following the Invasion, of course. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the SmackDown shows of this era, how great they were in terms of work rate and roster and storyline even. But then over on the Raw side, it was a different story, and this was a prime example.
And this was the very first Raw-only pay-per-view, mm-hmm. Replacing the King of the Ring as the annual June pay-per-view event. And I dug this one up in the storage unit, which I had on VHS, complete with Sunday Night Heat.
Wow.
Leading into this, where we saw Ivory against Molly, where Molly had got... they had basically redone her gimmick. Because if you remember, there was a time period where her gimmick was she had a large ass. And then all of a sudden, she comes out here and Jerry Lawler says, "Is it just me or is Molly suddenly hot?" And that was her change of character. Didn't look any bit different than she did the prior week. But now her gimmick was she's hot. And... this was a very short match. Ivory won with the Poison Ivory, which was the X Factor, at 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
Don't all women have that move?
The X Factor?
Yeah.
The Bellas have perfected it. Yeah. Yes, we had Ivory with it. It's a staple.
And yeah, I guess so.
It's a women's maneuver.
I guess so. I'm envious of both of you, because Ernie, you had the DVD, John, yeah. You actually had a copy of the VHS.
How did you see this?
I had to look for a link on the internet.
What?
Well, I have no problem admitting that. It's an old show. It should be like public property by now. But anyway, the link I found, the only link I found to this show, was a video that was consistently out of sync. So
those are the worst.
I had heavy sync issues with all my video throughout this entire thing, and I had to just basically watch it with the sound off for the undercard. The rest of the matches I was able to find, but for most of this, you're gonna have to guide me through it, both of you.
It's tough doing this show now in the post mega upload world.
I know.
the soap hunt down.
Yeah.
So anyway, the pay per view begins with a video package profiling the feuds with Triple H and Kevin Nash. This being 9 years ago, Bill Goldberg and Chris Jericho, and then Austin and Bischoff, and it includes the announcement by Austin that Mick Foley will be the guest referee for the Hell in a Cell match. Your announcers for tonight, Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and this takes place in Houston, Texas, at the Compaq Center. And we, having an issue here.
Save us, Ernie.
How does this show start, Way?
I would tell you if I could see it without any sync issues.
Okay,
Ernie.
Here we go.
Uh-oh.
Well, first we have the angle going on with Krince Nowinski, who is paired with Teddy Long and Rodney Mack. And they're doing this race angle with Devon of the Dudley Boys and how he takes orders from Bubba Ray because Bubba Ray is always the one saying, "Get the tables."
Oh,
and this is racist because he's treating Devon like his personal slave. This is... the mindset of the heels and what they're trying to convince him of.
Were you watching wrestling at this time, Ernie?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And what were your thoughts about the storyline?
I think back then it was like normal, right? Because it was kind of post-attitude and HLA kind of thing.
Black man rebelling against the white man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a story as old as time. And we kick things off with the Dudley Boys against Rodney Mack and Christopher Nowinski with Teddy Long in their corner. And we start things off. Rodney Mack misses Devon in the corner, takes a flying forearm. Nowinski is wearing a face mask at this time, stemming from his injury at the Royal Rumble, where he actually suffered the first of his many concussions and then continued working. And that led to him basically having to retire from wrestling. And Bubba then gets in, gets clotheslined by Mack on the apron. Heels get the advantage, and they come back with a splash to both heels in the corner. And then the Dudleys dump out Mack and Nowinski. They double-team Nowinski. Bubba splashes him in mid-ring, and then Devon comes in. Nick Patrick here is distracted as Mack pulls Devon's legs between the post. And then Devon takes Mack to the floor. Nowinski goes to hit Bubba with his mask. But Mack comes from behind and hits the blackout, which is kind of like the million-dollar dream into a slam. And then this sends Mack to the floor. They hit the what's up spot onto Nowinski, and then Bubba calls for the tables. But Teddy Long gets on the apron, and Devon hesitates. He has this life-altering decision to make. And Devon ends up going after Teddy Long, but in the meantime, gets hit by Rodney Mack, and then Nowinski hits Bubba Ray with his mask, and he pins Bubba Ray at 7 minutes and 7 seconds. So we are teasing this dissension between the Dudley Boys, two brothers, but unfortunately the color of their skin coming to divide the two.
Yeah, well, what terrible lowbrow trash.
This is a political science at its finest.
Okay.
You're black. Your partner's white.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know about you, Ernie, but like when I saw this, I was very turned off on this show, and I knew it just brought me back to the tone of this time in Raw, and just how much I hated most of what I saw. You know, this was like Maury Povich level type of stuff.
This was one thing with going to the brand specific pay per views was that. At least at this time, if the storylines weren't great, I mean, the in-ring was typically very strong at this point from the WWE when you had Raw and SmackDown. But when you simply go to Raw, these are your opening matches. Chris Nowinski and Rodney Mack.
And what was the writing situation at this time?
On this Raw, I think, was Michael Hayes. But I don't know 100% who was doing Raw. But at the time, it was like Bruce Pritchard and Dave Lagana on SmackDown with a little influence from Paul Heyman. But okay. Raw would have been Michael Hayes, probably Brian Gewirtz. I don't know who else would have been on the team. Probably a few others.
Any thoughts on this match in particular?
Well, the 3D, they were... Dudley Boys, they were pretty much over. But like, did they break up right after this? Or?
They
stayed together?
Yeah.
Yeah, they broke up before this with the brand split. Yeah.
That's right, and then they put them together. So
after
this
that
was,
failed miserably.
They've already done the reunion.
And then they tailed it. Yeah. They teased it. Okay.
So anyway.
And Rodney Mack, he was like Crimson.
Crimson.
No, he was undefeated.
In look, in work, and in how
undefeated.
Over he was.
He was undefeated.
Was he undefeated?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Wow.
Okay.
I do not remember the Rodney Mack undefeated streak ever.
And they're both colored themed. Because one's crimson, the other's black.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Oh,
that's
black disgusting. Out. That's the gimmick.
Rodney Mack ended up going into MMA briefly after his
he did.
After his wrestling.
And how did he do?
Well, we don't hear about him today, so.
Yeah.
Didn't exactly rock the Louisiana fight scene on fire. So then Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler preview the Redneck Triathlon, and it's going to include a pie-eating contest, and this was established on Raw Monday night when they spun the wheel, and Eric Bischoff thought it would be eating actual pie, and Austin says, no, it's like when The Rock talks about pie. You know, poontang pie? Then they spun on Sunday Night Heat, they spun the wheel for event number two, and it would be a burping contest because someone thought, well, you know what? We got to entice last minute buys, so let's tell them, let's tease what they're going to get to see on this pay-per-view for $35, a burping contest.
Only on pay-per-view.
God, can't give this why away. Didn't they just flash on the screen, skip this pay-per-view? We've got we got Vengeance coming up next month. Save your money.
This was terrible. Oh. Just terrible.
A pie-eating contest and a burping contest in this best 2 out of 3 redneck triathlon. So we start off with the burping contest with our mediator, Terry Runnels, and each go back and forth, and we actually got piped in burps between Austin and Bischoff. Each get 3 attempts. Austin wins and says, "I feel better," at the end of this long piped-in burp. And Bischoff tells him to go see a doctor. And thus began, I would say, the worst shit Steve Austin has ever had to do on one night in his career. And to his credit, he was trying here.
Oh, my God. And I really wish he didn't. Because
Was Austin, like, into it enough that he actually could pull this off?
No.
He was, like, fully... You could tell this guy was trying to make this shit work.
You could have Marlon... Yeah. Listen, you could have Marlon Brando do this burping contest. It's going to be... still going to be ridiculous. To me, this was the absolute death of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
This did not burping. Kill him.
A burping contest.
It was horrible to watch.
This was Austin versus McMahon. This was a guy who spearheaded the Attitude Era burping contest. Come on.
He was bulletproof at this point, I will say.
No, it's a good thing he wasn't wrestling anymore.
This was at best a shitty edition of Raw thus far.
This was way worse than any Raw that we're watching these days.
But things got better, because next up, two men were going to fight for possession of a woman, a staple in pro wrestling. Test against Scott Steiner for Stacy Keibler's managerial services. And it was more than overstated that with Stacy Keibler came... her vagina.
Is that what they stated?
Well, not in so many words.
You would assume.
Stacy Keibler gets her own entrance. Test tries to kiss her early on, and she gets onto the apron. Test pulls her down, and meanwhile, Steiner's already in the ring. So the highlight of the pay-per-view is Scott Steiner climbs to the outside of the apron, and he goes to tackle Test on the floor. But he trips. One of the best moments. This is when Ernie said bad blood. This was the first image and only image I had of this pay-per-view. Was that's the pay-per-view where Scott Steiner fell off the ring apron to the floor and nearly died on a live pay-per-view.
But he connected, no?
He grabbed like his heel, and Tess just tried to sell this. This must be seen by everyone. This is the only 30 seconds you need to see on this pay-per-view.
Oh boy.
So, but then they had to have a match after this. I'm surprised Steiner could even continue after this. And Steiner was in horrendous health at this point. His back was like completely shot during this whole run in the WWE, but they tried to protect him. Test goes to the floor, holds Stacy in front of him as a shield, and then drops Steiner with the distraction and then gets sent into the steps. So Test has the heat. He mocks Scott Steiner with his push-ups. Test then comes off the top into a suplex where he nearly lands on his neck by Steiner. Steiner then hits an inverted DDT. Test sends him to the ropes, hits the pump handle slam, gets a 2 count. And then Stacy Keibler climbs up to the apron, and it leads to Test hitting a boot to Steiner for a 2 count. Test grabs a chair. Keibler tries to stop him and then shoves Stacy to the floor, misses Scott Steiner, and the chair bounces off the top rope into his head. And Steiner then hits his finish. 6 minutes and 27 seconds. Scott Steiner wins Stacy, who runs into the ring, jumps up. Steiner grabs her ass very uncomfortably. And then as she goes to leave the ring, Steiner holds open the ropes, and Keibler just repeatedly bends over for Steiner to look up her skirt. A wonderful statement for gender relations, I thought, this match was.
No, this entire pay-per-view.
TNA, I think, is actually progress as compared to this.
No, no doubt, no doubt.
The babyface wins his trophy.
And of course, as with most things on this undercard, wrestling is the afterthought, because this was not much.
Crowd was into this, though. They popped huge when Scott Steiner won here.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, see Stacy.
I watched this on mute, so I wasn't able to tell. Just watching the wrestling, though, not much of a match.
Any additional thoughts, Ernie, on this tremendous match between Test and Scott Steiner?
Not much, but like Jerry Lawler afterwards, he says, "Can you see it? I think I see it." And then I'm like, Like, I miss this Jerry Lawler, the perverted old man.
The creepy Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
Can you see it?
He's funny.
I think I saw it. Austin and Bischoff are in the back. They discuss the pie-eating contest, and Bischoff says, I've done some research, and he's hired four women, saying, I did some hands-on interviewing. And Bischoff wants to go first. He shows off these four models. And Austin says...
Models? I don't know.
Whoa, okay. Sorry, Wei. Your standards are...
No, I just mean I don't know if the intent is to...
They were hookers.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm getting at.
All right. Prostitutes. Austin finally agrees, says, okay, you can go first, Eric, but I get to pick which flavor of pie you will eat. And Eric is in his glory, thinking he is going to... get to go down on one of these hookers on a pay-per-view.
What?
This is what they were selling the whole night.
Oh, I know.
One of the selling points for this pay-per-view was that you were going to see Austin and Bischoff eat out a bunch of women.
Yeah. Live cunnilingus on a pay-per-view. Like, this was just really embarrassing. Could you imagine being under the age of 18 and asking for your parents' permission to order the pro wrestling show that's on tonight?
Imagine watching this with your parents.
You're better off watching porn with your parents. It's more honest.
It gives you, at least gives you a payoff.
It delivers, yeah.
They recap Christian winning the vacant Intercontinental title from the prior month at Judgment Day in a battle royal, and basically stealing it from Booker. As Booker eliminated Christian, the referee was out cold, and then Christian eliminated Booker, and the ref saw Christian in the ring, and Christian backdoored his Wei to keeping or winning the IC title. So we got the rematch here in Booker's hometown of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Booking seems pretty straightforward, and yeah. The writing was on the wall for what the finish would be. Booker comes out, great reaction. Crowd is excited to see Booker win his first WWE championship. And Christian has the heat early on in the match. Booker drops him throat first on the top rope, hits an inverted DDT for a two count. Christian comes back with a uranage for a two count. And then he's getting frustrated, while Lawler is annoyed here because on three separate occasions he goes to tell a cop joke, but the action or Jim Ross would cut him off as he was midway through his joke. And then he finally got to tell his joke. And he said, yeah, there was someone in Booker's neighborhood who said, have you seen the cops? And the guy in his neighborhood said, no. So the guy said, great, stick them up.
I forgot about this.
I did not miss this Jerry Lawler. And his lame jokes. You should try that one out, Ernie.
Yeah,
see how it gets over.
That's gold right there. When Christian had he had the new haircut.
That's right. He had just got his haircut at this point.
Oh, the first time, right?
Yeah, I think this was very early. Because they showed the clip from the last month's pay-per-view where he had the long hair. And not a great look, I got to say, in hindsight, with that. Where he had, like, the straps and the tights and the long hair. Just didn't really suit him. The haircut was a good move.
In hindsight, his career really took off after the chopping out of the hair. Do you do any racial comedy in your set?
Racial? Right. Not so much. Not so much.
No. You don't see color.
No. And plus, like, I'm just scared. I'm scared if, like, someone gets offended, and then they'll get, they'll start heckling or something.
That's what's funny, though. Offense is funny.
Yes, for some people, yeah. But
yeah, you don't wanna put people into the awkward mode, though, where they feel nervous about laughing at stuff.
But that's funny too.
I guess so. Like, when I went to, years and years ago, when I went to see Dave Chappelle,
yeah,
I felt awkward laughing at certain jokes. It's like, this is not my place to laugh here.
But
it was funny, though.
People wouldn't mind.
So,
mm-hmm.
He's kind of got to, hey, it's part of the show.
Yeah.
We continue onwards here. Booker hits a scissors kick and a missile drop kick for a near fall. Hits a spinneroonie. Christian bails to the floor. And he's leaving with the title. So what happens? Jack Doan, the general manager of Raw, apparently, gets on the microphone and says that if Christian doesn't come back, then he will lose by countout and forfeit the title. So Christian panics, he returns to the ring, and then he runs away, and Booker chases after him, and then he grabs the belt and he hits Booker with a belt shot. So what happens? Christian is disqualified and keeps the title. I was like, okay. So Jack Doan's going to get back on and say, well, the match continues, and if you try to get disqualified, you will lose the title. Nope. That was it. That was the finish. 7 minutes and 53 seconds. This fucking sucked.
Yeah. a terrible, terrible finish in a very standard match.
Oh, horrible.
So,
Booker would win the title like a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, what was the point of all this? In his hometown. Let's just, I don't know.
I don't know.
Horrible
yeah.
finish.
A terrible, terrible show thus far.
Undercard was not, not doing it for me. They show Kevin Nash taping up in the locker room. This was before the wellness policy, by the way, guys. I don't know if you could tell by this this one shot in the locker room, but Kevin Nash was he was taking this run seriously.
Yeah, he was.
Holy shit.
I guess I'd like to know, like, who was the genius that decided to put Hell in a Cell and Kevin Nash together? Why?
Well, they did a straight singles match the prior month on pay-per-view, and it died a fucking death.
Okay.
So you needed to gimmick this up and put some bells and whistles on this.
Of all the gimmicks out there, of all the things you could do a pie-eating contest. Why why Hell in a Cell and this man?
Well, a ladder match would have been crazy because he's got shot knees. Okay. It wouldn't be till 9 years later they would book him and Hunter in a ladder match.
Oh, my God.
When he was at full capacity. But yes, we've got... And remember, this was back when the Hell in a Cell was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge deal at this point. So, he's taping up, and then we've got Lawler in the ring for round two of the Redneck Triathlon, the pie-eating contest.
Oh, wait, sorry, John. Did you watch the promo for JR's cookbook?
Oh, that's right. This was... they showed JR's cookbook here, and they just took out random, like... lines from the book where it's got stories and recipes with stories about boob jobs and just randomness. And I actually have JR's first cookbook. I don't know. He did two of them, and I do have one of them. And I remember getting it for Christmas one year and going through it, and it was extremely unhealthy. Just looking at it, everything was like butter. Anyway.
Did you make anything?
I didn't. We should do a video
yeah.
of making something from JR's cookbook.
Sure.
That'd be a lot of fun. We can make some, like, sooner steaks.
Yeah, someone should ask that at Ask Away.
Yes.
And you guys can
a cooking show.
Cook it here.
Cook away.
Yeah.
The puns never end.
No, no.
So, Austin comes out, and Bischoff is with him, and Austin gets to pick which of the four hookers gets to come down and reveal herself to Eric Bischoff and his tongue. So he takes a look at the four women, and he decides he's changed his mind. And he says Eric is interested in mature women. And Eric is just a fool here, oblivious to where Austin is going here. And he introduces Mae Young, who comes down with the fabulous Moolah. And Mae Young gets into the ring, and she goes to make out with Eric Bischoff. And then Eric thinks he's over and done with it, but Austin says no. This is a pie-eating contest. And it leads to Mae Young stripping down to her underwear and giving Eric Bischoff a Bronco Buster into the turnbuckle. One of the most disgusting moments in WWE history. Is there anything you want to add to this?
This segment had everything. It had simulated oral sex, old woman fetish, and abuse against old women, because right after this, Mae Young, Eric Bischoff leaves disgusted, but then it's Austin's turn, and so Mae Young is all excited, ready to have Austin eat her out, and then Austin is just staring at her, and then stuns her,
stuns
this
Mae Young,
90-year-old woman.
Now, there was a story after this that... Like, this whole pay-per-view was basically a rib on Eric Bischoff, just to fuck with the guy. And there was a story that Mae Young put, like, sardines or shit into her underwear for the Bronco Buster spot.
Oh, this is terrible.
Ernie, what would you like to add to this? What were you thinking when you were watching this? Like, oh, I don't remember this.
I didn't. I did not miss. After this, I was like, I don't miss the Attitude Era.
That's exactly what I thought. Because all the people who complain about, oh, PG sucks. No, it doesn't suck. There was plenty of shit in the Attitude Era, and this was a perfect example of stuff that was not PG and was fucking horrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't really classify this as the Attitude Era, though. This is like them trying to rekindle what they thought was great about the Attitude Era, but this was not what was great about that.
This pay-per-view had 18 thumbs down by this point in the show. This was quite the first hour and a half of this show.
Yeah.
Everything awful. Was pretty
bad. Did you watch it in one sitting? Or?
No, I did not. It took me two or three to get through this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Some of these, you got to pace yourself, I've realized. Leaving it to the last minute has proven, ever since AWA Super Clash 3, where I left it till the night before, and that pay-per-view felt like it was 8 hours watching it. Mm. So basically, Austin forfeited. He didn't want to go through with the pie-eating contest, so we were tied 1-1. So thankfully, we were going to get a third sudden-death round out of this. We continue onwards. They aired a promo for Vengeance, which, by God, 30 seconds here, this pay-per-view was already better than Bad Blood. It was all built around Kurt Angle's return from his neck surgery, and suffice it to say, that was a much better show than Bad Blood. Kane is in the back, staring into broken glass. This looked right out of The Undertaker's lair. Shows the angle from Raw where La Resistance attacked Rob Van Dam, and the big suspense was, where was Kane? He never came to make the save for RVD. And then RVD confronted Kane afterwards, asking, where were you? And Kane just walked off. Jonathan Coachman is in the back with Sylvain Grenier and Rene Dupree. They say they hate Texas, and that Texas gave the world that buffoon, George W. Bush. And the crowd boos vociferously, because this was when George Bush was still popular in the U.S.
2003.
Yeah, yep. this guy's leading our country.
He's a great
valiantly. And Dupree then dedicates this match to France and the greatest president of all time, Jacques Chirac.
I think he said George.
George?
Or is it Jacques?
George Laroque is a hockey player.
Okay, whatever.
Rene Dupree was 19 years old at this time.
Yes.
It's nuts.
And he didn't look it.
No, he did not look it. He was also in the pre-wellness development. A gigantic 19-year-old. I did not look like that at 19. I was a bit smaller.
You wouldn't look at that at any point in your life.
Most likely not. No. Go to the tag title match. We've got Kane and Rob Van Dam defending the tag titles against Grenier and Dupree. Jim Ross, as RVD makes his entrance, says, they make great cereal in Battle Creek, and they made a great athlete in Rob Van Dam.
What cereal do they make?
Is that where post-cereal is from?
Kellogg's.
And Smacks.
Battle Creek. I never knew that.
I gotta look this up.
Thanks to Jim Ross, on top of his cereal history. Van Dam plays up early on that his eyes are all fucked up from Kane's pyro. I think this was legit that the smoke like got in his eyes.
Is that right? Yeah. By the way, it's Kellogg's. That's in Battle Creek.
Anyway, so RVD either just had a spliff or he was not used to this version of smoke in his eyes.
Oh, it also has posts, so everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's the cereal capital of
Cereal City is what they call it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm surprised they didn't have a wrestler come out of Battle Creek. He could have been the serial killer.
Yeah.
RVD.
Totally.
Educated feet.
Captain Crunch.
There's a reverse crossbody by RVD to Dupree. Goes for a monkey flip, but Grenier drops him on the top rope from the outside. Kane gets tagged in. He attacks both with a bunch of power spots. Hits a top rope clothesline to Grenier. And then Kane no-sells this double clothesline, and RVD baseball slides Grenier to the floor. Does a back body drop to Dupree. And then a follow-up helo to take out the heels, but in the process, he lays out Kane, further playing up their dissension. And then La Resistance brings RVD back in. They hit their finisher, which is a double choke slam. And La Resistance pins RVD and gets the win, 5 minutes and 48 seconds, to become the new tag team champions.
Your thoughts, on Ernie, on this match?
The evil Frenchman win the titles.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay. But this is before he took off the mask, right?
What's going on here?
Are they watching it?
Yeah, it was a press conference. Can you...
As for the Marquez fight, $1,200 top, down to $200.
Awesome. Oh, so this is what you guys talk about.
You want to turn on the light, John?
All right. So, yes, the Frenchmen win the tag titles. Ernie, what were your thoughts on this one?
It was a pretty good match, I guess. And then the La Resistance, they just debuted, no?
They had debuted. I mean, it was right after. The U.S. had gone into Iraq, so that was kind of what they were capitalizing on here with France not joining the fight.
I don't think I could state enough how much I really dislike this show and this era of the product, because all these gimmicks are just so generic. All the booking is so generic. Everything is just screams generic pro wrestling show, and not even a good type of generic.
I really did not enjoy this, specifically this Raw product at the time. I mean, as much as I will criticize at times the booking today, I much more enjoy the product right now than this.
Yes,
but they absolutely had the star power. Like, if you look at the
that's
cars.
That was the trade-off. You had great guy, you had star power and guys that could really go, and the talent was significantly better than it is today. But that was, I just thought the creative here was less than spectacular. Mm-hmm. We go to what else did we get here? We go to they aired a vignette here for Gail Kim with this like Matrix style promo, mm-hmm. and she was set to debut. And then they air the video setting up the Goldberg Jericho match, and there was this big mystery angle of someone trying to run Bill Goldberg over with a car, and it was revealed to be Lance Storm, who tried to murder Bill Goldberg.
Oh, God, I'm just shaking my head. This period had really had everything. You had abuse against women, old women, oral sex against women, and even a car angle.
In fairness, I feel this pay-per-view was an extreme example of what was going on at the time. I don't think this is a fair representation of everything at the time. I mean, there was some good here in 2003.
Okay.
But this show, I am not going to defend. So it turned out to be Lance Storm, who was set up by Chris Jericho. And Jericho says that no one wants Goldberg here in the WWE. He says they were friends once, but the bigger star he became, the bigger his ego got. And he got jealous because they ended up playing this off of a 1998 non-program the two had that Jericho was trying to work, and legitimately Goldberg didn't want to work with the guy. So then he came to the WWE, Jericho did, became a big star. And then they show Goldberg attacking Jericho. Jericho sprays mace in his face. He spears Goldberg. He pours paint onto Goldberg's car. And Jericho is basically driving him insane so that he won't be focused for their big match. And this is where the culmination came. Jericho and Goldberg. And what was interesting here was it was just a few weeks before this that they had their big backstage fight at the time. So it was a really... Bill Goldberg did not have the greatest of runs in the WWE, and he will fully admit he did not enjoy his 1 year with the WWE. And this was at a point where I don't think that creative wasn't exactly booking this guy tremendously at the time. He was getting frustrated. The WWE was frustrated that he wasn't working with the audience, that he had a big contract, so he came in and it ruffled some people the wrong way. So there was a lot of tension behind the scenes involving Bill Goldberg.
What led up to the backstage fight? What was surrounding that?
I don't know what it was that Jericho goes through it in his book, that I think a lot of it just kind of stemmed from the WCW days, and then Jericho had kind of heard of Goldberg talking about him behind his back. Jericho confronted him, and then it led to this fight where, from all accounts, Jericho kind of got the best of it and got him in this like front face lock. And that kind of got Jericho over to a lot of the guys in the locker room at the time because, I mean, Goldberg had a ton of heat, as you can imagine. How dare you make more money than us? So, interesting backstory here for this match. And Ross notes that Goldberg is a proponent of the mixed martial arts world as they fight on the floor and trying to do a mixed martial arts style in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Goldberg actually got a bunch of boos throughout this match. You could tell the audience, there was certainly a segment of the audience that was not in favor of Bill Goldberg. Goldberg hit a military press and then crotched Jericho on the top rope, hit a sidekick to send him to the floor. And then Goldberg misses a spear on the floor and goes through the barricade, and this led to him having to sell the right shoulder for the rest of the match. And as he's selling, he gets back to his feet right in front of a sign that reads, "Goldberg, please go away." As Jericho rolls him into the ring, hits a missile dropkick, and he works over the shoulder. Goldberg was actually bleeding from the forehead here, and he ended up using his left shoulder to fight back and continued to sell. Jericho hits the lion salt right near his head for a two count. And Jim Ross, you could tell, really putting over Jericho in this match and how close he was coming to beating Goldberg and how much of a fight he was bringing to Goldberg. Jericho went for a quebrada at one point to Goldberg, who was standing, landed on his feet, and then suplexed Jericho. He speared Jericho, played up that Goldberg was hurt, didn't get all of the spear, and this led to Goldberg's sucks chance. And then Jericho countered the jackhammer. There was a low blow after Charles Robinson was thumbed in the eye, and the fans were getting behind Jericho, the heel here. And then Goldberg made his comeback, hit a second spear to Jericho, and then the jackhammer got the win in 11 minutes and was holding his arm after, and Ross saying it wasn't easy for Goldberg and really protected Jericho, I thought, in the commentary here. So an interesting match to watch as they, you know, there was one way to really book Goldberg at this time, but, you know, the WWE was not going to present him in that same way they did in WCW. But I thought, by Goldberg standards, I mean, I thought Jericho did a great job with him in this
match. Yeah, and I really feel like all credit here goes to Jericho, because just watching this Bill Goldberg work, I felt bad for the guy, for Chris Jericho, because of how rough his offense looked, how stiff his offense looked. It just looked like a guy who was very reckless and didn't really know his own strength. But
and, you know, no, and to,
good match.
And to Goldberg's credit, I mean, selling was never one of his strengths. And I thought he did a very good job here with the shoulder. And this was one of Goldberg's better matches in his career, I thought. And Jericho, within this year, I mean, he had good matches with Goldberg, with Hogan, and with Kevin Nash. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Jericho was, you know, quietly perhaps the most valuable worker they had at this time, because of the guys he had to get really great matches out of. Mm-hmm. This was kind of the first positive, I thought, Ernie, on this show.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good because, like, Goldberg was selling for the first time. Yeah, it was one of the best matches.
Were you a Goldberg fan?
Yeah, for sure. For
Who
sure.
were growing your favorites up? Growing up?
From WCW?
Yeah, or anywhere. You know, when you started to watch wrestling.
Well, The Rock, Stone Cold. Yeah, Goldberg was pretty good. Like NWO, but like I used to love like Kevin Nash and Scott Hall until I watched. I actually started looking at their matches. Because right. Before they're just cool, you know.
Yeah.
Back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, you're like, oh, okay. <That's>,
I understand.
But even
not
Rick,
that
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
It's funny if you look. The poster for this event was originally Goldberg and Triple H,
huh.
And they were going to be doing the big title match.
Is that
for this,
right?
And then they ended up changing it to Kevin Nash and inserting him there. But you can see it online, the original poster here, and they were kind of delaying the title program between Hunter and Goldberg. And at this point, I mean, Goldberg had lost a lot of steam, mm-hmm. and I think there was a lot of back and forth if they even wanted to put the title on him, and eventually they did, but I think it was a little bit too little too late.
Yeah.
With Goldberg and trying to make him, you know, a big force within the company and a draw. So Ross then... first they show a hog pen, and they go to Terry, who is with Austin and Bischoff, and to settle the tie, it's going to be a sing-off. And Bischoff is very happy, because he's heard Austin sing, and Terry tells Austin that he is not a very good singer, and Austin says, I know, I suck. So we're going to see a sing-off later in the night. And then Ross throws to the Michaels versus Flair video. They play this up as a dream match between the greatest wrestler of the 80s against the greatest wrestler of the 90s. And it was set up on an angle from Raw where Flair was going to challenge Triple H for the world title. And it was basically a show-long storyline where everyone was giving Flair a pep talk that he could beat Hunter, and this featured Michaels as well. And Flair questioning if he still had it. Michaels called Flair the greatest. And he said, I want to know if I'm in your league. And this led to what was going into this as a babyface versus babyface program. But then they tagged up on Raw, and Flair sucker-punched Michaels, called him a wannabe. And Michaels said that he didn't have the torch passed to him. He just took it. And that was going to lead to this match here at Bad Blood. And going into this, I mean, this was one of the key draws for this show, was mm-hmm. a lot of people getting to see Michaels and Flair. They had worked in the early 90s, but not on any kind of pay-per-view or mm-hmm. television show. It was like a very rare match that they had in the early 90s. So this was a big deal at the time.
Flair looked good, at least in terms of his shape here. He just compared to now especially, still very mobile and, you know.
Hasn't been the hasn't aged gracefully, I guess, over the past 9 years.
No, not so much. No.
But match begins. Michaels takes the back of Ric Flair early, and they're doing a bunch of exchanges, and Flair goes to the floor. Michaels hits a plancha to the floor, and then Flair attacks the left knee of Shawn, works it over, leads to a figure four, and Ross brings up Gordon Solie, mentioning how the figure four puts pressure onto 7 points of your leg.
7 points?
7 points.
Hmm, interesting. That's cool. I thought just the two of these two, you know, Michaels selling the figure four and Flair struggling to keep it locked down, these guys like barely had to move at all, but... Just this rest spot, it looked like a real battle, just with their mannerisms. So I think the two did great work.
Flair used a thumb to the eye to break the figure four. They do a roll-up exchange. Flair gets sent to the turnbuckle and just makes it over, doing his spot. And then he runs to the top rope and ends up jumping off the top rope into Michael's forearm. It just looked like they had the timing off on that spot. And then we saw a follow-up superplex delivered by Shawn to Ric Flair, which looked extremely gruesome. Michaels then brings a table out, sets it up on the floor, places Flair on the table, but then Randy Orton runs out from the audience. They just kicked off Evolution here, and he takes a super kick, and his head just rocked off the floor when he took this super kick. I mean, we see right now the concussion he's going through, and he's had a series of these, and just watching this from 9 years ago, Jesus Christ, like his head just ricocheted off the floor taking this bump. Did not look pretty at all. And somehow in all of this, Flair began bleeding from the back of the head here from a spot with Michaels.
It was after he got put through the table?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Michaels had splashed Flair through the table off the top rope. And that's where he started bleeding. Flair then comes back to Michaels. Earl Hebner ends up taking a low blow from Flair, who hits both men low. Michaels comes back with a forearm, does his kip-up spot, but the referee is out. He hits the top rope elbow and then the sweet chin music, but Orton returns and hits Michaels with a chair shot, and Flair gets the win, 14 minutes and 19 seconds. And the announcers sell this as Michaels' dream match being lost. And... There was a big fallout after this match, actually, because Shawn Michaels, back then WWE.com, they covered these shows and stuff much closer to like an actual news site. Like, they did interviews with guys, and they had this interview up with Shawn at the time where he just complained about the lack of time they got, how disrespectful it was that they only got 14 minutes.
Wow.
And was just... It was just so funny that, I mean, it's all storyline form today, and it's just imagine a guy doing a promo complaining about how much time him and his opponent got.
On their own website.
Oh. On their own website.
That's
so
very interesting.
Shawn was not happy about this match, and very difficult to live up to expectations, I'm sure, but of course they would work again at WrestleMania a few years later.
Well, I still thought this was a very good match, especially, you know, considering Flair's age at this time. I mean, there are a lot of standard Flair spots, but just to see him pull all that off was still a real pleasure. And Shawn, as always, was very tremendous.
Bischoff comes out for the last round of the Redneck Triathlon, and he says he is going to sing his own theme music.
My friends and I have always wondered. I mean, we didn't really wonder, but we would always joke that it really sounds like Eric's voice in his theme song.
Oh, yeah, it was.
That was him?
Yeah, they obviously sweetened it and stuff.
Are you sure?
I think it was. Totally sounds like him.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever advertised that, though. If it was him, then he would have sung it better live.
Well, he was supposed to do it terribly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I don't know if it's him on the recording.
I think it is.
Okay.
It's just a produced,
sounds like
heavily produced vocals. Well, he lip syncs his own music, and he gets called on it by Austin.
Hold on a second. It says this song is called "I'm Back," and it's by Ted Negro.
Don't have to be racist about it.
That's the name of the artist. Sorry.
Oh. It sounds a lot like Bischoff.
I think
it's Bischoff, and probably that guy did the instrumentals for it, maybe.
Maybe. It's unusual, though, especially for the era, to get the star to sing the song.
Okay, well, Eric Bischoff, when he downloads this show, can let us know if he did the vocals for this or not. He actually Do you remember that time he was on the law a few years ago and he got pissed off when we used this theme for his intro?
Yeah, well, that was him working with his character.
That second, when I realized Eric Bischoff was coming on our show to play the Eric Bischoff character, I was like, this is the last time we'll have this man on.
Did he say that on the air?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did?
He was like, yeah, can you guys update your inventory? That's not my theme music.
Yeah.
This being the guy who... He was supposed to be on a segment prior where we had come in with his TNA theme, and he wasn't available. He didn't pick up his phone. So we had to come on at a later segment with him, and we didn't want to play the same music again, so we used his WWE theme. And that same night, they did a TNA house show where Hulk Hogan came out to Real American.
Oh, yeah, it's entertaining. It's fun. I like Bischoff interviews when he's in character.
Yeah, I don't know. Depends. You gotta be in the right mood.
Yeah.
So he's out. Austin calls him on it, and basically, Austin does not sing, and this leads to them spinning the wheel again, and it lands on Pig Pen Fun. So, all of a sudden, we've bypassed the sing off for the Pig Pen Fun, and Bischoff tries to leave, but some guy in the audience throws him back in as he tries to leave through the crowd. Austin comes out, decks Bischoff, stomps him in the ring, stuns him. They go up the ramp, and then Bischoff is tossed into the pig pen, and Austin, I guess, has won the redneck triathlon, and Austin celebrates in the ring with his beer. I'm sure this victory was right up there with his title wins and Hall of Fame induction. A night we never need to remember of Steve Austin's.
Yeah, this was shit. Complete shit.
Literally.
No, he launched him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This was quite the tumble Eric took into the manure.
Were you as happy as we thought you were when you chose the show and started watching it?
No.
Oh, man.
But this is way better than the first Hulk Pen match.
Henry O. Godwin. Hunter and Henry Godwin.
Remember that.
We get the video for the main
classics.
Event. They set up the angle where Mick Foley would referee the match after all the referees refused to officiate this because of the dangers of the Hell in a Cell. And Mick Foley returned. It was the first time he had been on WWE television in a year and a half. And Hunter tried to bully him to step down, and it led to a brawl on the go-home Raw, where Hunter eventually made his comeback on Foley, kept beating him up, but Foley kept counting, saying that on Sunday, no matter what you hit me with, I will come back and I will count you. And it led to Kevin Nash getting a visionary fall on Hunter to go into the pay-per-view and try and convince people that Kevin Nash has a chance of winning the world title from Triple H. So that's our main event. Hunter and Nash, Hell in a Cell with Mick Foley as the referee. Nash actually got a pyro display here for his entrance. And Triple H was donating his purple trunks for this big Hell in a Cell affair.
Purple trunks, yeah.
Hunter takes a big boot in the first spot, and they both fight to the floor. Nash shoves Hunter right into Foley early on, which looked more like a botched bump as opposed to something that was planned. Very awkward spot. Lots of back and forth here. Nash was bleeding early on after Hunter brought out a toolbox and attacked him in the knee with a hammer, and then he used a screwdriver, driving it into the head of Kevin Nash. And Ross apologizes for the graphic nature. And then Hunter grabs a barbed wire 2x4 under the ring, hits Nash in the sternum. And when Nash started fighting back, nobody cared about this until he finally got the 2x4 and hit Hunter, so both men were bleeding. There was a snake eye spot delivered to Hunter in the corner and a barbed into the barbed wire. Got a 2 count, still no heat. I don't think anyone took Kevin Nash seriously here as a challenger. It was very difficult.
The guy just seems so out of place in this type of match. That's a really where it's he has a lot to live up to, you know. When you put a guy next to Hell in a Cell, and Kevin Nash is the furthest name I would associate.
Nash,
did you see the barbed wire bat? Why was there like a handle? Did you see the handle?
They always have that on there.
Why?
I think it was they used to have that handle there for. It was the Hell in a Cell where the guy had to climb the cell with that barbed wire, and they could just put it on their wrist and still climb the sides. So maybe it was there for to be user-friendly, I guess, so you could transport the deadly weapon.
That was weird.
Nash was selling on the floor as some fan held up a big lazy sign, which I got amusement out of. Nash then, Hunter hits him with a wooden crate, breaks it over his head, and then he gets the sledgehammer, but Foley takes it away, and Hunter decks Foley. Hunter then misses Nash with the steps and falls onto the steps himself, gets a two count. And then Hunter takes out Nash and Foley with chair shots. Foley was now bleeding as well. It's the referee and both men doing blade jobs.
Unprotected chair shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, John, did you notice that, like, after he hit Foley with the chair, he was automatically bleeding. I even see him blade.
Foley could blade with the best of them.
Yeah, I think he already cut himself before he got hit.
But Foley took some just ridiculous bumps in this match.
I know. And you know what? What got the biggest reaction of anything he did?
They were more into Foley than Nash. They were by
more,
far.
Well, no, I was going to say, Sacco got more of a reaction than any of those major bumps he did.
Yeah, and that's where he came back with here with Sacco. While Nash was selling, he applied it to Hunter, but then a low blow was hit to Foley. Nash hits the steel step shots to both Foley and Hunter and gets a visionary fall on Hunter, but he had taken out the referee. So then Hunter runs into Nash, sending Foley off the apron and into the cell. It was like the back of his head just smashed into the fence. And it's hard to watch these bumps Foley took then, and now you see how physically limited he is, just getting around every day. Nash counters the pedigree with a slingshot into the barbed wire in the corner. He hits the jackknife, and the crowd pops as Hunter kicks out at two. Hunter then comes back with a sledgehammer shot and hits the pedigree to pin Kevin Nash 21 minutes and 3 seconds as Foley reluctantly counts three. And then Orton and Flair come out to congratulate and carry Hunter with the title. And that's how the show goes off the air. That was bad blood. Bad pay-per-view. Though the last three matches... You can't criticize too heavily.
I like the main event. I like the Michaels match. I mean, not memorable at all when you compare it to any of the other Hell in the Cells, but I don't think anyone expected it to be. I thought Hunter did a good job carrying, and Nash, to his credit, did a pretty decent job as well. But Jesus Christ, everything else was
just... Yeah, I had to sit through a lot to get to just the hidden good of this show.
Atrocious and bland and average. That redneck stuff is like... It rivals any of the worst things we've reviewed on this show.
What were your thoughts, Ernie, giving this a ranking out of 10?
Yeah, like the last three matches were really good. I'll say maybe a 6. 6 out of 10.
2.5.
2.5, wow.
I'll give it a 3. This was the first half of this card was just so forgettable. I never have to watch it again in my life. But the last three matches, which were... I thought were overall fairly good, and can't complain too much. I would say Jericho Goldberg I enjoyed the most, actually, out of all the matches on this card. So those were our thoughts on Bad Blood. So let's transition away, and we will head into feedback, see what you had to say about this this forgotten turd of a pay-per-view. And we start off with William Young. He writes, 2003 was the year I began watching wrestling, around the time of SummerSlam that year. I look back on that year with fondness, but I have also grown enough to admit that it was a pretty terrible year for the WWE, with very brief shining moments to even make it worth a second look. Bad Blood is evident of this, an utterly dull, forgettable, and flatly booked card with the awful redneck triathlon time-killing segments in between. The worst part is, matches with two capable performers end up being pedestrian and meh at best. Booker T. Christian may have been the worst of their brief and below-average feud. The entire undercard is completely meaningless and boring. Even Flair vs. Michaels falls flat, especially when considering how HBK was a consistent MVP on Raw during this time, and that years later he and Flair would have a terrific WrestleMania match. Goldberg, Jericho, and Nash Triple H are okay at best, and that is not what you want for any pay-per-view. The only good things, in my opinion, are Nash's awesome entrance that always gets a pop out of me, the Winnie the Pooh and Tigger in the front row, and how many times the Flair-Michaels video package replayed Flair punching Michaels. 10 times! This show is indicative of the very worst of 2003, but would be answered by SmackDown only a month later with the year's best pay-per-view, and arguably one of the best the company has ever put on in the last 10 years, Vengeance 2003.
G-Hall. E-God.
You two are certainly taking one for the team, reviewing this debacle of a pay-per-view. I remember regulars who would come out to the local pub stopped coming after this. In all fairness, there was some good on this show that was plagued by bad. The redneck triathlon was entertaining for what it was. And while you could call this filler, keep in mind this pay-per-view ended almost half an hour early. Personally, I enjoyed the IC title match and Christian's heelish tactics to retain. Accordingly, Orton's interference in the HBK Flair match was surprisingly fun to watch. Jericho managed to eke out a semi-watchable match with Goldberg. It's a shame they didn't just give Ivory and Molly a place on the main card instead of Sunday Night Heat, as I'm sure both would have balanced out much of the rest of the garbage on this card.
Yeah, that would have equaled things out, the three-minute women's match. That would have been the trade-off.
People were literally leaving halfway through the worst Hell in a Cell match ever, where I was watching. I should have left as well.
Rich Bergman. This was actually one of the last pay-per-views I ever purchased, and with good reason. It was a good example of the decay of WCW stars in the WWE. I'll admit I was a fan of Goldberg, Booker T, and Big Papa Pump while in WCW, but I think in the WWE, not so much, especially Steiner and Goldberg. I think this was Goldberg's second match in WWE, and I was already tired of him. The Hell in a Cell was good, although I'm almost never a fan of having a special guest referee. Hell in a Cell was a fitting ending to this rivalry, and it was nice to see these two finish this way and not rehash it later on. Like, say, 9 years later. Oh, wait. I always thought Rodney Mack and Chris Nowinski were entertaining, perhaps not as a team, but as individuals, and wonder why neither ever made it big in the business. Overall, I give this show a 5 out of 10. Thanks again for the show. Really enjoy it. I've been listening to past podcasts. You guys have me hooked on combos.
Blaine Vandergren, this was not a great show, but the highlights for me were some of the video packages, as WWE has always had a high production value. I enjoyed the one for the Flair and Michaels match. The in-ring left a lot to be desired. Christian and Booker had a decent match with a bad finish. I think it's safe to say that Michaels and Flair had the match of the night. I actually don't mind the Cell match either. It wasn't a catch-as-catch-can classic, but that wouldn't be expected for this type of match, and I thought it was fine. It was probably one of the better matches of Kevin Nash's career, especially considering his latest match with Hunter. The Redneck Triathlon was an incredible waste of time. Before I forget, I love the theme song for this show as well. Which was what?
Headstrong.
Oh, yes.
By Trapped.
Trapped, yes.
Jay Hunter, 2003. A really rough time to be watching Raw. Right in the middle of Triple H's reign of terror with his lame duck feuds, while Lesnar and the SmackDown 6 were on the blue brand. I wasn't that interested in Bad Blood since I saw almost the exact same matches a week prior at WWE's Insurrection pay-per-view in Newcastle, England. In retrospect, that was an even worse show, but being there live was fantastic. Bad Blood was awful. The best part is a DVD extra. Al Snow interviews Steiner and Stacy. He asks Steiner how he feels about winning Stacy's services full-time. He says, that's not all he's won. He, quote, knows what it's like to taste the sweet nectar of a woman's juices. What a guy.
That does sound like the highlight. Christian Dior Small. I remember watching this and remember preferring SmackDown pay-per-views over Raw pay-per-views, and this is a prime example of why. I completely forgot that Rodney Mack teamed with Nowinski, and that has to be the most random tag team in wrestling history. To the surprise of no one, Steiner and Test had a pretty awful match and a pretty awful feud overall. This show picked up with Booker versus Christian, which wasn't bad, but seriously hurt by the DQ finish. Once again, the hometown guy loses, and we get nothing when we could have gotten a great reaction if Booker won the IC title. I never liked RVD and Kane as a team, but this was just one of the many random teams that RVD would be in over his WWE run. Flair versus HBK was good, but nothing like we expected. And the Redneck Triathlon just absorbed so much time and did nothing apart from making Austin more popular than Bischoff, which was already the case. The main event really revolved around Foley as a ref over Nash and Triple H. Not to mention this feud was really rushed as they only had one match at Judgment Day. I'm guessing they wanted to end it after seeing how awful these two worked. The highlight was Jericho versus Goldberg, which was probably Goldberg's best match in his WWE career, and one of his greatest matches ever. It showed how truly talented Jericho is.
Alan Gaynor. Stacy Keibler, currently arm candy of arguably Hollywood's top leading man, was once the prize in a match between Scott Steiner and Test. First four matches were forgettable, but HBK Flair, Goldberg, and Hell in a Cell matches elevated this card, making it one of the better single-brand pay-per-view cards. For a future review, I'd recommend the best single-brand pay-per-view, Vengeance 03.
Yeah.
Respectfully disagree, Alan, so in terms of bad blood.
He brings up something interesting, though. Do you guys think that George Clooney and Stacey Keibler ever watch back some of these pay-per-views?
Yeah, maybe while they're sipping some nectar.
Yes.
She had the best acting. Did you watch the acting? Whenever Tess would
imagine insert. George Clooney just like YouTubing Stacey Keibler and some of the stuff she did in WWE.
Oh,
I'm sure
my
it was
God.
Quite the turn on.
Yeah, I was in Ocean's 11. I was on ER. What were you in? I was in this. Alan Jones, not a very exciting show. It was foolish of the WWE to keep Nash in the title picture for this long, as it was evident that he was pretty banged up and couldn't go, and Foley's participation only served to have him put over Triple H yet again, as this was during the Triple H will never look weak era. Flair and Michaels was disappointing considering their ability at the time, and Goldberg Jericho was very reminiscent of the basic layout of DDP and Goldberg, down to the selling, but without Goldberg's enthusiasm for the sport. Overall, a very uninteresting show.
Corey Ferreira. Very standard WWE show. The infamous redneck triathlon is good comedy, not to be taken seriously, and it showed the good dynamic Austin and Bischoff had when they were the co-general managers of Raw back in 2003. The main event is pretty solid, and Hunter carried Nash to a good cell match, and the best Nash match since his 03 run. I remember the angle Hunter did with Foley going into the show that involved the cell on Raw, and Hunter continuously giving the pedigree, and Foley kept on getting back up. Flair HBK is a solid match, and personally, I feel it is underlooked because of their match from WrestleMania 24 in 2008. I like the Orton interference, which sets up the HBK Orton program for the next Raw branded show in September. Amazing how far Stacey Keibler has come from being the prize to the winner of Scott Steiner and Test to being George Clooney's latest conquest. If you guys decide to review further 03 shows, I suggest the next show from July being Vengeance.
Kieran Roche, I gotta say that I love the WWE from 2003 when I was watching back then, and to me they could do no wrong. But now looking back, I do realize that not all that stuff was great. Like this pay-per-view, for instance. The only thing that was worth watching on the show to me was the Goldberg versus Chris Jericho match, which I believe was Goldberg's best match ever in the WWE, which I presume we can thank Jericho for. The rest of the card was uneventful and only okay to good, except for Steiner falling on his face from the ring apron. That was 5 fucking stars of hilarity.
And our last bit of feedback from Patrick Tony. I wasn't a big fan of the Ric Flair light character Triple H was playing at this time. The Hell in a Cell match was enjoyable, but I wish it was Foley and Triple H because their dynamic was more interesting. I know they stopped blading in the company for health and PR reasons. I think for Hell in a Cell matches, exceptions should be made because blood adds to the drama of the match. So thanks everyone for your feedback, which you can always leave at reviewaway.com for all the shows we review, Raw, Impact, and our weekly look back at some of these forgotten gems of events. But before we end off, Ernie, want to chat a bit about your YouTube video series, The Entourage, and what's coming up for you in the near future.
Oh, yeah, Entourage, it's a low budget YouTube show on YouTube, and my
conduct interviews.
Yeah,
unsuspecting subjects.
Yeah, and I want to have Wei Ting and John Pollock on a future episode.
Oh, well, let's do it up. I think our agents will give us the go ahead.
Okay, cool. So you guys can check that out at entourage.com.
Entourage.com. We'll post a link up on the Review Away page so people can go check that out. And do you have any shows coming up in the upcoming future for those in the Toronto area?
Yeah, I'm gonna be at Absolute Comedy in Young and Eglinton, but that's gonna be in May. I'm not sure the dates right now.
All right, well, keep it tuned then. Mm-hmm. You're on Twitter, right?
Yeah, at Ernie Vicente.
Ernie Vicente,
yeah,
on Twitter. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in, Ernie. And despite the show being not the most memorable one, I do enjoy watching the shit ones as well. So thank you for the selection. Thanks for coming in. And congratulations on winning the Royal Rumble pool.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's quite quite the achievement with the Royal Rumble
pool. Thank you for leaving us the Wii game.
Yeah, we got to figure out something to do with that.
Yeah.
So that, me and Wei will put our heads together. Now, before we end, Wei, we've got to figure out the next month or so, because we have 5 weeks until WrestleMania. So what we're going to do is next week, we're going to review an event of your choice, and then after that, for the next four shows, we're going to do two WrestleManias with the two go-home Raws going into each of those WrestleManias, because I think a lot of people want us to review more than one WrestleMania, and doing three shows leading into one Mania seems a little excessive. So next week, early next week, or the end of this week, we will put up a poll so you guys can decide which two WrestleManias we do, where we do the review for WrestleMania and the Raw going into that WrestleMania. So that will cover the 4 weeks heading into Mania. But for next week, Wei, what would you like to review?
You're putting me on the spot, because I thought we were doing those Mania reviews starting next week. So, Well, for next week, I'd like to go back to WCW. It's been a while since we've visited that whole promotion and that time. And let's do the final uncensored pay-per-view of WCW, Uncensored 2000, featuring Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair in the Yap Up High Strap Match.
The Yap Up High Indian Strap Match.
There we go.
I cannot wait to chat about this. I've never watched this event.
No, I've only seen the promo. The Apple Pie Indian Strap Match.
So that's going to come up next week. Uncensored 2000. A big thank you to Ernie for joining us. And Ernie, as is customary when we have a guest on, you get to choose the tune we go out with. So what would you like us to play on the way out? Doesn't have to have any relevance to this show.
Oh, yeah? What about the theme song from Bad Blood?
Well, that's what we're going to come into this show with.
So okay. Let's
pick some what music do you like?
Oh.
If we were to hit shuffle on your iPod, what would be the song that comes up?
Oh, wow.
That screams Ernie.
That screams Ernie. Oh. We Are Young by Fun.
We Are Young by Fun.
Yeah.
All right, that'll take us out.
Okay.
Thank you to Ernie.
Thank you.
Check us out, liveaudiowrestling.com, reviewaway.com. We'll chat with you later on.
Give me a second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she's waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar. And I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight. by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.